Hi, I'm Jashan Singh, and you are welcome to Dr. Stephen Hawking's The Brief History of Time. In previous episode, we have discussed how the wormholes can be in our universe, and we have seen some overview of what the wormhole is and how the time travel is going to be possible. In this episode, we are going deeper into it and knowing what's the advent of wormhole and would the time travel really possible in future. In 1935, Einstein and Nathan Rosen wrote a paper in which they showed that general relativity allowed what they called bridges, but which are now known as wormholes. The Einstein-Rosen bridges didn't last enough for a spaceship to get through. The ship would run into a singularity as the wormhole pinched off. However, it has been suggested that it might be possible for an advanced civilization to keep a wormhole open. To do this, or to wrap space-time in any other way so as to permit time travel, one can show that one needs a region of space-time with negative curvature like the surface of a sandal. Ordinary matter which has a positive energy density gives space-time a positive curvature, like the surface of a sphere. So, what one needs in order to wrap space-time in a way that will allow travel into the past is matter with negative energy density. Energy is a bit like money. If you have a positive balance, you can distribute it in various ways, but according to the classical laws that were believed at the beginning of century, you weren't allowed to be overdrawn. So these classical laws would have ruled out any possibility of time travel. However, as has been described in the earlier chapters, the classical laws were superseded by quantum laws based on the uncertainty principle. The quantum laws are more liberal and allow you to be overdrawn on one or two accounts, provided the total balance is positive. In other words, quantum theory allows the energy density to be negative in some places, provided that it is made up for by positive energy densities in other places, so that the total energy remains positive. An example of how quantum theory can allow negative energy densities is provided by what is called the Casimir effect. As we saw in chapter Black Holes Aren't So Black, even what we think of as empty space is filled with pairs of virtual particles and antiparticles that appear together, move apart and come back together, and annihilate each other. Now, suppose one has two parallel metal plates a short distance apart. The plates will act like mirrors for the virtual photons or particles of light. In fact, they will form a cavity between them, a bit like an organ pipe that will resonate only at certain notes. This means that virtual photons can occur in the space between the plates only if their wavelengths fit a whole number of times into the gap between the plates. If the width of a cavity is a whole number of wavelengths plus a fraction of a wavelength, then after some reflections, backward and forward between the plates, the crest of one wave will coincide with the trough of another and the waves will cancel out. Because the virtual photons between the plates can have only the resonant wavelengths, there will be slightly fewer of them than in the region outside the plates where virtual photons can have any wavelength. Thus, there will be slightly fewer virtual photons hitting the inside surfaces of the plates than the outside surfaces. One would therefore expect a force on the plates pushing them towards each other. This force has actually been detected and has the predicted value. Thus, we have experimental evidence that virtual particles exist and have real effects. The fact that there are fewer virtual photons between the plates means that their energy density will be less than elsewhere. But the total energy density in empty space, far away from the plates, must be zero, because otherwise the energy density would wrap the space and it would not be almost flat. So if the energy density between the plates is less than the energy density far away, it must be negative. We thus have experimental evidence both that spacetime can be wrapped from the bending of light during the ellipses, and that it can be curved in the way necessary to allow time travel from the Casimir effect. One might hope, therefore, that as we advance in science and technology, we would eventually manage to build a time machine. But if so, why hasn't anyone come back from the future and told us how to do it? There might be good reasons why it would be unwise to give us the secret of time travel at our present primitive state of development, but unless human nature changes radically, it is difficult to believe that some visitor from the future wouldn't spill the beans. Of course, some people would claim that sighting of UFOs are evidence that we are being visited either by aliens or by people from the future. If the aliens were to get here in reasonable time, they would need faster than light travel, so the two possibilities may be equivalent. Hawking says, however, I think that any visit by aliens or people from the future would be much more obvious and probably much more unpleasant. If they are going to reveal themselves at all, why do so only to those who are not regarding as reliable witnesses? If they are trying to warn us of some great danger, they are not being very effective. A possible way to explain the absence of visitors from the future would be to say that the past is fixed because we have observed it and seen that it does not have the kind of wrapping needed to allow travel back from the future. On the other hand, the future is unknown and open, so it might well have the curvature required. This would mean that any time travel would be confined to the future. There would be no chance of Captain Crick and the Starship Enterprise turning up at the present time. This might explain why we have not yet been overrun by tourists from the future, but it would not avoid the problem that would arise if one were able to go back and change history. Suppose, for example, you went back and killed your great-great-grandfather while he was still a child. There are many versions of this paradox, but they are essentially equivalent. One would get contradiction if one were free to change the past. There seem to be two possible resolutions to the paradoxes posed by time travel. One I shall call the consistent histories approach. It says that even if space-time is wrapped so that it would be possible to travel into the past, what happened in space-time must be a consistent solution of the laws of physics. According to this viewpoint, you could not go back in time unless history showed that you had already arrived in the past and while there had not killed your great-great-grandfather or committed any other act that would conflict with your current situation in the present. Moreover, when you did go back, you wouldn't be able to change recorded history. That means you wouldn't have free will to do what you want. Of course, one could say that free will is an illusion anyway. If there are really a complete unified theory that governs everything, it presumably also determines your actions. But it does so in a way that is possible to calculate for an organism that is as complicated as human being. The reason we say that humans have free will is because we can't predict what they will do. However, if the human then go off in a rocket ship and come back before he or she set off, we will be able to predict what he or she will do because it will be part of recorded history. Thus, in that situation, the time travel would have no free will. The other possible way to resolve the paradoxes of time travel might be called the alternative histories hypothesis. The idea here is that when time travelers go back to past, they enter alternative history which differ from recorded history. Thus, they can act freely without the constraint of consistency with their previous history. Steven Spielberg had fun with this notion in the Back to the Future films. Marty McFly was able to go back and change his parents' courtship to a more satisfactory history. The alternative histories hypothesis sounds rather like Richard Feynman's way of expressing quantum theory as a sum over histories, which was described in previous chapters. They said that the universe didn't just have a single history, rather it had every possible history, each with its own probability. However, there seemed to be an important difference between Feynman's proposal and alternative histories. In Fame and Sum, each history comprises a complete space-time and everything in it. The space-time may be so wrapped that it is possible to travel in a rocket into the past, but the rocket would remain in the same space-time and therefore the same history, which would have to be consistent. Thus, Fame and Sum over History's proposal seems to support the consistent history hypothesis rather than the alternative histories. The Fame and Sum over Histories does allow travel into the past on a microscopic scale. In Arrow of Time chapter, we saw that the laws of science are unchanged by combination of the operation C, P, and T. This means that an antiparticle spinning in the anti-clockwise direction move from A to B can also be viewed as an ordinary particle spinning clockwise and moving backward in time from B to A. Similarly, an ordinary particle moving forward in time is equivalent to an antiparticle moving backward in time. As has been discussed in this chapter and the Black Hole Sancho Black chapter, empty space is filled with pairs of virtual particles and antiparticles that appear together, move apart, and then come back together and annihilate each other. So, one can regard the pairs of particles as a single particle moving on a closed loop in space-time. When the pair is moving forward in time, it is called a particle. But when the particle is traveling back in time, it is said to be an antiparticle traveling forward in time. The explanation of how black holes can emit particles and radiations was that one member of a virtual particle-antiparticle pair, say the antiparticle, might fall into the black hole, leaving the other member without a partner with which to annihilate. The forsaken particle might fall into the hole as well, but it might also escape from the vicinity of the black hole. If so, to an observer at a distance, it would appear to be a particle emitted by the black hole. One can, however, have a different but equivalent intuitive picture of the mechanism for emission from black holes. One can regard the member of the virtual pair that fell into the black hole as a particle traveling backward in time out of the hole. When it gets to a point at which the virtual particle-antiparticle pairs appear together, it is scattered by the gravitational field into a particle traveling forward in time, escaping from the black hole. If instead it were the particle member of the virtual pair that fell into the black hole, one could regard it as an antiparticle traveling back in time, coming out of the black hole. Thus, the radiation by black holes shows that quantum theory allows travel back in time on a microscopic scale, and that just time travel can produce observable effects. One can therefore ask, does quantum theory allow time travel on macroscopic scale, which people could use? At first sight, it seems it should. The Fame and Sum over History proposal is supposed to be over all histories. Thus, it should include histories in which space-time is so wrapped that it is possible to travel into the past. Why then aren't we in trouble with history? Suppose, for example, someone had gone back and given the Nazis the secret of the atomic bomb. One would avoid this problem if what Hawking called the chronology protection conjecture holds. This says that the laws of physics conspire to prevent macroscopic bodies from carrying information into the past. Like the cosmic censorship conjecture, it has not been proved, but there are reasons to believe it is true. The reason to believe that chronology protection operates is that when space-time is wrapped enough to make travel into the past possible, virtual particles moving on a closed loop in space-time can become real particles traveling forward in time at or below the speed of light. As these particles can go around the loop any number of times, they pass each point on its route many times. Thus, their energy is counted over and over again and the energy density will become very large. This could give space-time a positive curvature that would not allow travel into the past. It is not yet clear whether these particles would cause positive or negative curvature, or whether the curvature produced by some kinds of virtual particles might cancel that produced by other kinds. But the possibility of time travel remains open. But I'm not going to bet on it. My opponent might have the unfair advantage of knowing the future. Hawking has given us a doorway that it is possible to have a time travel in future, but he's not betting on it because he is also not confirm about it. That's it for this episode. We will meet in another episode with the topic the unification of physics, because of which we have started reading this book for getting a unified theory. So if you like the podcast, please subscribe it or follow it on whatever platform you are listening to it, and share it with your friends and family, and please send your reviews regarding the podcast. Keep supporting. Thank you.